For those of you who I haven't met yet, my name is James Parley. I am married to lovely Renita, who's sitting in the back. We have three boys, Ethan, who is 5, Silas, who is 3, and Liam, who is 1. Life is very busy, but very full and very joy-filled these days, and I absolutely love it. I'm going to be one of my own biggest pet peeves today, and I apologize for that. Because I'm not here necessarily giving you a sermon, but I'm going to share some stories with you. I really like it when people get up on a Sunday morning and they share from the Bible, but that's not really, there'll be a couple little Bible-adjacent things, but hopefully what you're getting is the impact that the Word of God has, both in my life and in the lives of the teenagers that I work with, and how that impact can be felt in the world around all of you. So, to start at the beginning, I work for an organization here in Abbotsford called Youth Unlimited. You might be familiar with it under the name Youth for Christ. We are an international organization that operates in over 140 countries. And just a few weeks ago, you heard one of my coworkers, Michelle, speak about her ministry and her experience of things in mission connected to Jester's Theater and the way that God has impacted lives through that ministry. My ministry looks a little bit different. I am here, here in Abbotsford, and primarily working with kids in middle school and high school. And I'll explain a little bit around what that looks like, but we're not quite there yet. To backtrack, what I'm going to kind of cover item by item is my essentials for youth work, my essentials for sharing the gospel with teenagers. And these are the things that I have found helpful, but they may be a little bit different for you. And that's okay. The first thing that I'll start with, I have to backtrack a little bit before I even get into the props. 2006. Actually, I have to backtrack even beyond that. I have to pay attention to my notes here. I wanted to be a youth pastor growing up. And I think it was one of those things where, because the people who had been some of the most impactful in my life, were like my youth leaders, right? And so I had that desire that I wanted to be able to impact the lives of other young people in the exact same way. And I had this idea in my head that what I wanted to be able to do was actually like help train and equip young people for the ministry that God was calling them to. That's what I wanted to do. So I thought I was going to be a youth pastor. And like many people, part of my life on a regular basis was going to summer camp. Camp for me was up at Anvil Island, Daybreak Point Bible Camp. It's a beautiful place. If you ever get the chance to go there, I highly encourage you to. It's a wonderful place, like so many summer camps are. But after, of course, I went to camp myself as a camper, then started going up as staff. And in the summer of 2006, I was up as staff, and there was a guy there who was speaking named Andy Harrington, who at the time was the executive director of Greater Vancouver Youth for Christ. And one of the things that he talked about at the end of his week of speaking was an opportunity to learn about youth ministry called Life Teams, which brings me to the first thing, this shirt. So Life Teams is a program that Youth Unlimited runs here in Abbotsford. 8.5-month course that counts for college credit, where we teach young people how to share the gospel, how to live lives of seamless spirituality, how to learn to care for souls and desire to reach the lost. So I signed up for that program in 2006, 2007. I went through Life Teams, and that experience changed my life, and it shifted my direction a little bit from being somebody who thought that I was going to be a youth pastor to working almost exclusively with unchurched youth. So I'm kind of still a youth pastor, but just like none of my kids show up to church. But the roles look kind of similar. And it was through that process where I really, yeah, developed a heart for unchurched young people. Sorry, I'm just gonna move this back. Unchurched young people, people who didn't have maybe sort of the most solid foundation, whether in home life or just the rest of the support structures around them. Through that year of spending some time learning, but also spending like practical hands-on time with teenagers who were hurting, my heart broke for them. And I came to understand like God's heart for them, at least partially. So when I finished Life Teams, I stayed on as a volunteer with Youth Unlimited for like 6 years. I was working and volunteering still at the drop-in center that we ran at the time, but kind of was in this tension point of, should I actually be doing this as vocational ministry? And everything kind of came to a head one day when Renita and I were walking around Mill Lake and talking about the future, and I just had a conversation with God. It was very short. There were three questions that I asked God: Do you want me doing youth ministry? Yes. Do you want me doing youth ministry with Youth Unlimited? Yes. Do you want me doing youth ministry with Youth Unlimited right now? Yes. So I heard from God. What am I supposed to do? I just had to be obedient. Okay, I'm going to start digging through things here, and we'll get to that later. Okay. The first thing, this is my name tag. There's actually two name tags on it. One is, this is my Youth Unlimited kind of badge, and then this is a tag from the school district. For the past 10 years, I have been a volunteer at Abbey Senior Secondary School, and we have built an amazing partnership with that school, and even have the privilege of like actually being in classrooms with kids. So sometimes, yeah, I'm just there like helping a kid like one-to-one, like get their head around their math homework. But the program that we work with is a little bit specialized. The kids are in one classroom for the entire day rather than having a whole bunch of different subjects with different teachers. So the teachers get to know their kids. So there's lots of opportunities when a kid is struggling that the teachers will kind of bring us in and say, hey, you know what? Can you just like take them for a walk and chat with them? Because there's something going on, right? So we get to make contact with the kids in that place, which is like an absolutely like amazing privilege. And when I started, I gotta share this part of it. When I started, the woman who was the coordinator of the program, super amazing woman, very outgoing, very energetic. I would actually describe her as a force of nature. and she was not a Christian, not a person who loves Jesus. But as I got to know her, and as I was there spending time with the students, I got to know some of her story. And there were a couple things that she shared with me in terms of her history with the church and kind of being disappointed and hurt by it. But one time she said, she's like, I don't believe the same as you. I don't believe in your God. But I see the way that you come here and you love these teenagers. You love our students. I was like, so why would I not want that to be a thing that they experience? I think of her fondly, and we still kind of keep in touch occasionally. It's every time that she moves school, she tries to recruit me to come to wherever she is to do stuff, which again is an incredible honor, and I look forward to continuing that partnership. But it was that thing of building trust and community with her, and then getting opportunities, to share Jesus even with her and with the other staff there. So my ministry is not exclusively just to teenagers, but it's to whoever kind of comes across my path. It tends to be teenagers, but not exclusively so. Okay, next component here. I decided it was easier to bring my hockey gloves than a big hockey stick. On Mondays, I spend some time with one of my other coworkers at Abbey Middle, and we play a lot of ball hockey with kids, and these keep me from getting slashed across the wrist frequently because they're not necessarily super great at control. But it's that thing of entering their world, of going where people are, and this is what they like to do. So we come alongside them and we do what they like to do. As opposed to coming in with our own agenda and our own program, we create space for that kind of thing to happen, but it starts for us, that connection point starts by entering their world, right? And engaging with them, as I said, with what they do. There's one young man that I think of with ball hockey. He is a competitor. He pushes so, so hard. And he tries so hard. And he's really polite, but it's like, but when he's playing, he gets a little hot under the collar, as some of us are also prone to doing. And if he feels like somebody's not playing fair, if he feels like he's being disrespected, he will go off. And we get big fireworks, which isn't always fun. So he and I have talked many, many times about finding peace, about finding calm, about knowing what's important, about knowing who he is. And as we have those conversations, we start to talk about purpose. We start to talk about identity and about identity in God. He would describe himself, he's 14 now, or just turning 14. But he would describe himself as, not even 14, excuse me. He's just turning 13. You know, it's like he would say, he's like, I believe in something. It's like, I don't know what's out there yet, right? So he's in a process, in a journey, but he's open. And that's where a lot of my kids are at. They're open. So I get to have conversations about, well, here's what I believe. And here are maybe some ways that you could experience the same thing if you're open to it. Okay, next thing. My wife hates this hat. This is my rain hat. I wear it, I do supervision, noon-hour supervision at Abbey Middle as well, and rain or shine, I am out there and wandering the field, and so I wear this hat because often it's raining. but as I'm wandering around doing noon-hour supervision, I'm looking for ways to connect with kids. Right, I'm wandering around, I'm introducing myself, I'm asking kids questions, honestly, even just simple things. I usually try and have like one question for the day, right, of like as I wander around, I'm going to ask the kids their name and this question. So like something like, you know, it's like if you could do anything you wanted, what would you do? Anything you wanted. You didn't have to worry about money, what would you do? And kids' answers are very, very interesting, very surprising. I'll ask questions like, if you could get rid of one thing in the world, what would you get rid of? And sometimes kids will be like, oh, I hate this food, so I'll get rid of this. And then sometimes kids will be like, yeah, cancer, because I lost somebody important to me. It never fails to amaze me. And yet, again, now at this point, I'm not surprised, right? It's like, but how quickly people are willing to dive into the deep things of their lives in a very quick conversation if you're willing to be intentional and you're willing to listen well. Now the kids run up to me, hey, you're the counselor guy. Kind of. Well, you give really good life advice. Oh, I appreciate that. And then we pick up conversation. It gets to the place where, yeah, there's a few kids who they're seeking me out every time that I'm there because there's something on their mind and they want to be able to talk about it because I've made myself available. Next thing is a ball of yarn. Every year, I make toques like by the dozens. and many of you know that. Many of you have seen that, and all of you. But yeah, I make toques. I go through a lot of yarn. I've got too much yarn. But every year, the group of students that I work with at Abbey Middle, or sorry, excuse me, at Abbey Senior, within that program, I give it at Christmas time. I give toques away to every kid in grade 9, and then any of the other like new kids who've come in other grades. So I probably give away around like 3 to 4 dozen toques every year. And each one of them is handmade, and they get to pick. Like, I walk in with this massive bag, and I set it up at the front of the class, and I get the kids they draw numbers out of a hat in terms of order, and then when their number is called, they get to come up, and they get to pick a toque, whichever one they want, right? So they find something that's uniquely theirs, and Man, it's so awesome. I love it. They wear it with pride. Years later, I run into kids who have graduated like 3-4 years ago. And like, I still have that toque you made me. I still wear it. It's in my house. I love that. And it's such a simple thing. It's such a simple thing. But as I make these toques, I pray for them because I don't know who's going to wear them. But God knows. He sees them. And it ends up just being this little tangible example of love, right? Because often by the time, I mean, it's like I've just gotten to know these kids by the time that Christmas rolls around, right? So we started to get to know them in September. So by the time that December rolls around, we've just kind of started forming connections. But they get to know, they get this gift, and they know that they're loved. And that's kind of important. Okay. This is a big component of my youth ministry. It's a Nerf blaster. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And of course, right, kids love using things like this. We run Nerf wars often sometimes for special events with kids. But I also actually have the incredible opportunity sometimes to do it during their PE class. So if you imagine, I've got like 4 dozen of these things. So you imagine like 50 kids running around a gym with a bunch of like pop-up tents set up in the gym, like all just like shooting at each other. And it's so awesome for a variety of reasons. Actually, first of all, the teachers love it for 2 reasons. One that's awesome, one that's maybe a little something they need to work on. One is that it gets the kids engaged. Like the most reluctant kid to engage in PE class, the one who like always sits on the side, you put a Nerf blaster in their hands, yeah, they're gonna play. They're gonna play, they're gonna engage, they're gonna get involved. The teachers also get to play too, and I think they enjoy shooting the kids just a little bit too much. Just a little bit too much. But there's something to that in terms of having good, clean fun that's not harmful, that's not destructive. There's also this, again, because of my work, I have to keep up with things about psychology and neuroscience. There was a study that was done a few years ago. It's recent within the, like, I would say recent within the past decade. I think it's actually within the last 6 years, where they found that dopamine, the chemical in our brains that lets us feel happy, our baseline level, when we become teenagers, around the time we hit 13 years old, it decreases by about 50%. So we wonder why teenagers are all of a sudden depressed and mopey and sad and just angry and frustrated. It's because their brains are being rewired to process more emotions and be able to do more things. But through that process, things are being thrown into chaos. And imagine the frustration now of you, maybe you remember this yourself, the frustration of being a teenager and not sure why you're unhappy all the time. You just know that you are. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't experience happiness. It just takes a little more work. And that thing of running around and shooting your friends in the face with foam balls, like it's like that just there's something there that spikes that dopamine level and makes you feel like actually there's hope. Now, the cool part is that, like, from the neuroscience perspective, there is actually hope, because by the time that you get out of those teenage years, by the time you hit kind of 19, 20, that dopamine level, that baseline level has come back up to normal. You're no longer operating in that sort of, like, depressive state. But we didn't know this a decade ago, right? And it's one of those things where it's like, man, it's like when I tell my teenagers that, you see the light come on their eyes. Oh, that's why it's like this. Yeah. And that's why we can say, you know what, it's going to get better, and we can give you hope. But in the meantime, even as you're in the middle of this, we can give you experiences that bring that happiness, right? That joy is not taken from you. It is not blocked off completely. It takes a little more work. There's also a spiritual component to it. Not just Nerf blasters. We do all sorts of fun things with kids. During the summer, we take kids to the lake a lot. we do ridiculous random things. We take kids to the Richmond Night Market. We'll go, you know, go into Vancouver and explore around. We'll, you know, have water gun fights at Mill Lake. Like, we'll just do whatever we can to give kids an opportunity to have fun, to feel joy. And I think there's a spiritual component, too, in terms of when we talk about Jesus coming, that you can have life to the fullest. We know that speaks to like the fullness and the spiritual richness of relationship with God. But I think personally that there's this component too where Not that our life is going to be nothing but roses and nothing but sunshine. We know that there are trials. But if that's all that it feels like life is, I think maybe there's something missing. Without getting too heretical and too whatever, prosperity-ish, right? It's like God does want good things for us. God does want us to experience joy. And again, to experience that in ways that are non-destructive and non-harmful. That's what I always want to guide kids towards. Another component, orange gloves. We have the amazing opportunity of taking kids skiing every year. And last year, this was kind of actually by accident last year, we were missing some gloves. Some kids didn't have ski gloves. So I stopped at Canadian Tire. And at that point, the only thing that they had were these blaze orange, like hunter's gloves. But they're insulated, which is great. And it made it really easy for us because we could always tell where our kids were on the hill. That thing of skiing, this year we took, I took kids 8 times. Like every 2 weeks, basically, we would go. And it gave them enough time to become competent, right? I mean, some kids had maybe gone skiing like once or twice, or like snowboarding like a couple of times. And snowboarding's much harder if anybody's ever done it. It's like you spend like the first 3 times that you go mostly on your bum. And then you kind of learn to be able to stand up awkwardly like a baby giraffe kind of. And eventually though, but by the end of the time, by the end of those 8 weeks, the kids were navigating down. They'd gone from very timidly, like scooting their way down the bunny hill, to confidently navigating the big quad chair at Mount Seymour. They'd grown in competence. They were better. They were capable of doing something that they didn't know that they were capable of. And as they built that competence, their confidence level rose because they knew they could do it. The kids that I'm working with, they don't necessarily have lots of opportunities to do things like that and to grow and be pushed again into something that's fun and that's challenging, just that right level of challenging, that it doesn't crush them. Although I spend lots of time on the hill encouraging those kids. Oh man, there were so many times where some kid would be sprawled out on their back in the snow after just wiping out for the 6th time or 17th time or 27th time. And they're like, I can't do this. And I'm like, yeah, actually, you know what? You can. Right from the basics again. Get up. Get on your feet. I'm going to help you. And I would walk with them like every step of the way, right? And so those kids who were the slowest, those kids who struggled the most, those are the ones I spent the most time with. And it was so awesome to see them grow in confidence. And as another like byproduct of that, man, like those the conversations on the chairlift up, right? You got 5 to 7 minutes on the way up, and every single time we could just get into whatever was going on in their lives. And I love that. Okay. This is an orange. Okay, I'm going to share a story with you. This is really, you're gonna laugh at this. It was one time when we were running a Nerf War, and we always bring like any youth event. You gotta have food. You gotta have snacks of some sort, right? So we're trying to keep it like relatively healthy. So for Nerf War, we had water and juice and oranges and some other, I don't know, some other snack things. And this kid comes up and he's like, can I have an orange? Like, yeah, absolutely. Like, help yourself. There's like a couple bags of oranges. And he says, I've never had an orange before. What? Yeah, I've never had an orange before. Why not? I don't know. I just haven't. Like, you've never been offered an orange? No, I've been like offered like lots of stuff. He's like, I just don't eat lots of things. Okay. And he has an orange. He's like, that was delicious. Can I have another one? Absolutely. You have as many oranges as you'd like. And it actually turned out, like, this wasn't a case where like his family didn't offer him like food in variety. He just had always kind of been a picky eater and never been pushed to kind of get beyond that. And so that year, we joked about it. He was the boy who'd never eaten anything, because every week we would like we would try something, and it would be like the first time that he'd had whatever. It was absolutely amazing. And that thing of, again, showing kids things that are the possible, again, like obviously, okay, this case is just a silly thing like an orange, but showing kids that things that they don't even know are possible. They don't know necessarily that it's possible to have a healthy family relationship. They don't know that it's necessarily possible to have a healthy romantic relationship. They don't know that it's possible to be loved by the God of the universe. And we have these opportunities to interact with them and show them things that they didn't even know were possible. And I love that so much. Okay, now I know there are many people here who make absolutely delicious buns. But these simple tray dinner rolls that you get from the grocery store are probably like one of, maybe not the best, but one of the greatest things mankind has ever come across. Okay? They're light and fluffy and delicious, and you don't even really like cut them. You just like dig in there with your fingers and you pull them apart and then slather whatever you're putting on there, whether it's butter or peanut butter or jam. We feed kids like a lot. The past 2 years have made things really, really difficult, or much more difficult as far as that goes. But pre-pandemic, on a weekly basis, I would have kids over to my house and we would eat dinner together. We'd be really intentional too about, good food, pulled pork, really good soups. And every time kids would be telling me, it's like, wow, this is the best meal I've had all week. More soberingly, sometimes it'd be, it's the only meal they've eaten that day. The only meal they will eat that day. We'd follow up dinner with Bible study time. But it's really hard to focus on, it's really hard to hear Jesus loves you when you're hungry. And so I love those opportunities that we have to meet the practical needs of people. And not as like a bait and switch, not as a conditional, well, if you want this, like you have to hear what we have to say. But just the thing of like, no, like, can we just bless you? Can we just feed you? Can we just meet this need? Can we get rid of that physical hunger so that you can now be freed to think about things that are maybe more significant? If any of you frequent McDonald's, you know what this is. Spend a lot of time at McDonald's. Spend a lot of time having coffees with kids at McDonald's. Spend a lot of time one-on-one listening to stories. Because again, kids are, and it's not just kids. People are looking to be heard. It's this super crazy thing where, like, the one universal story that I keep on coming across is that everybody at some point in their lives feels alone. If you've grown up in a healthy, loving, supportive family, you maybe feel that less. You're maybe operating from a good foundation of being known and being loved, being heard. A lot of the teenagers that I'm working with don't have that foundation. They feel alone. So I sit down with them for coffee and I say, just tell me what's going on in your life. I'm not a counselor, I'm not a psychologist. I'm a person who's willing to listen. And I make that very clear. But they love being heard. They love being heard, they love being listened to. They love being told that they matter. And it's in those conversations, those one-to-one things, then they get to, again, even further share, like, the richness of the gospel with them. I get to share the fact that, well, like, yeah, it feels lonely, and I understand. Do you know what the Bible says about loneliness? I get to tell them that there's a good shepherd who, even in those darkest moments, when nobody else, okay, culturally, this is an interesting thing. My kids don't, like, go to bed. They don't really. They lie in bed, and they get on their phones, and they hop on whatever method of communication with their friends, and they go until they pass out. Almost all of them, almost every single one of them, because they don't know how to be alone with their own thoughts. They don't, like, in that moment, in the dark of night, when you're lying in bed, if you are not operating from a foundation of knowing who you are and how loved you are, right? Like, those dark moments, like, when what you think are maybe your own thoughts start to settle in and tell you that you're unloved, that you're worthless. That's when that kicks in. What I get to tell kids is like, hey, you know what? In those dark moments, you know, you can actually have peace. In those moments when there's nobody else around, do you know that you can actually be affirmed that you are known and loved by the God of the universe? That is the thing that's available to you. That one's a game changer. Box of Kleenex. This one's essential. I wish that it wasn't, but it's very essential. As we get to know kids and we get to know their stories, we get to enter into the hard things of their lives too. I've kind of actually lost count of the number of times that kids have told me stories of the bad things that have happened to them. My heart breaks every single time. We've experienced so much loss, but we have this incredible privilege of being able to walk with people through that loss. Many of you remember several years back when Letitia Reimer was murdered. That was at my school. I was there that day. I wasn't there when it happened, but I was there earlier that day. And the grief and loss that that community experienced, that each of those kids walked through. The school district did a great job. They pulled in resources and professionals and really did a great job of trying to make sure that those kids were taken care of and supported. A lot of other outside agencies, including churches and Christian organizations, offered services. Most of them were turned away. We weren't, because we were already there. I will always treasure the fact that we were allowed to be there, but we got to continue to be there. So we were the ones who got to share, like, the light and the hope in the midst of ridiculous, oppressive darkness. I can't take that lightly. But they let us in because we'd built up trust. We built up trust and relationship with the kids. We built up trust and relationship with the staff there, the administration. So they knew us, and they were willing to continue to trust us in the middle of that. And that's what we get to do. We get to build up trust and community with people. Last thing. It's the Bible. Sorry, I'm showing the wrong side. It's the whole reason we do all of this. Whole reason that we do all of this is in here. Again, the past couple of years have been harder to do it, and it's been less frequent, but we would do Bible study with kids, and not in probably a way that you're used to. We would just open up a passage, we would read through it, and we would just ask the question, what stands out to you? It was always amazing to see the things that stood out to kids. Wait, the Bible says that? Yeah. So the Bible says we're supposed to love people like that. Yeah. Huh. We would start, there's a reading plan that we follow that kind of starts in Genesis and then works its way. It jumps. And so by around session 3 or 4, they're looking at me slightly confused when we're talking about the system of sacrifices and what to do with the blood and all of this stuff. And they're like, this is kind of icky. I'm like, yeah, it kind of is. And then by the time we hit session 12, where it's 12, 13, something like that, we're into Jesus. And when they're reading, and they're like, and they're reading about Jesus dying on the cross, they're like, hey, this is like the thing with the birds. Yeah, it is. They're making those connections themselves, right? They're realizing that the system of sacrifice is put in place at the beginning of the Bible, that Jesus satisfies that requirement. They're putting that together themselves. And it is so amazing when you see that light come on in their eyes. We invite them into relationship with God. We invite them into relationship with the creator of the universe. We let Jesus soak into their hearts. And that's how we see transformation. I'm taking entirely too much time. I'm gonna invite the band up, but I'm gonna leave you guys with this. We're all called, I have this incredible privilege of being able to do this vocationally, and that happens because I'm supported financially by this church and by individual members of this congregation, and I am so grateful for your partnership. I know that you can't be there every moment, and I get to be there as your representative on your behalf and on behalf of God, but the fact is we are all called to the ministry of reconciliation, every single one of us. 2 Corinthians 5 talks about that, and I just want to leave you guys with three thoughts. It's really simple. Again, this is what I do, and I get to do it, and I love it, but each one of us has a sphere of influence. Each one of us interfaces with people who may not know Jesus. So what do? We connect with them, find things of commonality, find ways of doing things together. By doing that, we build community with them, vulnerability and trust. I share my life intentionally with the teenagers that I work with. Obviously, there are limits in terms of appropriateness. Right? But when I'm having a bad day, they get to hear about it because we do this whole process of checking in. Every time that we meet together, I ask kids three questions. How are you doing on a scale of 1 to 10? What's one thing that's causing you stress? What's one thing you're thankful for? So I share the things that stress me out. I get to be vulnerable in that. I share the things that I'm excited for. And often, it's the blessings of God in my life, and I get to be open and honest about that. So, right, we connect with them, we build community with them by being vulnerable and sharing our own lives with them, and then as we get to know their stories and we share our stories, we get to share the story of Christ with them. It's the whole reason we do it. If we've experienced the love of Jesus in our lives, the love, the infinite, never stopping, never giving up, always and forever love of the creator of the universe, we're called to share that with the world around us. And then we're called to help them share that with the world around them. I just pray for you guys quickly. Jesus, I thank you for everyone here. I thank you for each heart. I thank you for each story. I thank you for how you have met each individual and you have impacted each life here, how you have filled them with your love. I pray that you would fill them more deeply with your love, that we would always be able to take that next step closer to you, because there's always a next step closer to you. And then God, I pray that we'd be able to take that in turn and show other people that same thing. We'd be able to invite them along with us in a journey towards you, and that would just set our world on fire. That would transform lives. We thank you for all of that in Jesus' precious name. Amen.